The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Thin away. Looking for a smart, sassy preview to sort you out for the new season? Know the feeling. Here in our freshly rebooted pod, we're as bewildered as a herd of buffalo-like creatures in Africa as we face this new campaign. Can anyone crash the Premier League's top four? Will Man City crash the bottom three? And what about all that wide world of football over the seas? Well, luckily, help is at hand, for we've beamed up a bevy of top football brains. McCarra, Lowe, Doyle, Honigstein, all standing by, pencil sharpened to burst our balloons of ignorance and fill us in like a cheap crossword. All in today's special Football Weekly preview. Well, yes, a warm welcome to this in no way cobbled together hastily, barely a day ahead of the new season preview. If you're just joining us for the first time, Football Weekly generally taken to the air twice a week, bringing you informed comment on events in England and beyond. And to do that today, we have The Guardian's chief football writer, Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kevin. Nice to see you again. Good. Paul Doyle.
How are you, James?
I'm very well. How are you, Paul?
I'm grand.
And thank you for joining us, because you're meant to be doing a preview of Wigan's chances this season. In a word, how are they?
Fair to middling.
Fair to middling. Good to have you and your global knowledge with us today. And, of course, same goes to you, Raphael Honigstein of the Süddeutsche Zeitung, an incipient .com billionaire with the top football website, Footbo.
Thank you for the plug.
No problem at all. Regular listeners will realise with a sigh, not sure of what, that we've got no Barry in our lineup today, as Glenn Denning is off celebrating a wedding in Ireland. What could possibly go wrong? Indeed. So no doubt all sorts of stories are to come. But anyway, we've got plenty to look at, because football has in some places already started and as others is about to get underway. And of course, it's been a busy summer. You've had all the managerial moves, you've had the transfers and that. And you've had, of course, all the transfers that didn't happen. We're not the only ones with no Barry. Of course, Rafa Benitez is in the same position as things stand. Although, Kevin, might that change before the season gets underway?
The fact that he played last night in the UEFA Cup and therefore can't appear in the Champions League till after the beginning of the new year suggests that his price would be even less than 18 million in Liverpool's mind, and Aston Villa wouldn't accept it. So I think he'll continue playing for Villa.
Good answer.
It's probably just as well, isn't it? Because is he the man that solves Liverpool's most urgent problems? Well, which, in my view, is on the right hand side.
I thought you were going to talk about the goatee again.
I mean, football's a matter of trend, and a year ago, nobody would have said 18 million for Gareth Barry. And I think if Aston Villa had got that, it would be quite a coup. I don't mean he's a bad player. In fact, Fabio Capello absolutely loves him, but I don't see that he would transform Liverpool's fortunes. If they had £18 million to spend, I think maybe adding a bit more quality on the flanks would be far better.
Well, apparently he does have £18 million to spend, because he says the problem isn't the money. The money is available. It's just that his bosses don't think that spending on Barry is wise use. So they're actually starting to question his judgment.
You mean they do know something about football? Is that what you're telling me?
Barry, of course, not the only move that didn't go through. You had a whole raft of these. Kaká and Robinho failing to move so far to Chelsea. Cristiano Ronaldo, above all, failing to go to Madrid. Not sure if you caught that story at all, Raphael. Moves there by a Realtor. Berbatov, though, again, this might happen to go to...
Well, this is a theme. You think the market hasn't really started yet, has it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot to happen yet.
And then you've got a lot of things that simply aren't going to happen, like Frank Lampard not going to Inter.
But the big clubs, I think, have got business to do. I doubt if Chelsea are finished for the season.
Right.
And Manchester United, if they don't get Berbatov, they want another highly important centre-forward.
So even though the season starts this weekend, you've got until the end of the month, there will be big moves, you think, still to come?
Well, it seems that the big clubs who are looking for a very small group of players who are capable of improving them find it hard to clinch a deal, because there's reluctant sellers and you've got players who are already earning a lot of money elsewhere, and it's really a protracted affair.
What's been your transfer of the season then? What's been your smartest move, Kevin?
Well, I think Zoltan Gira for nothing going to Fulham. I think he was injured last time in the Premier League, but he delivers a fantastic ball. I think for zero, he's an excellent signing amongst several interesting signings that Fulham have made. A Fulham fan was saying to me that they gave Laurie Sanchez a fair amount to spend, although he didn't necessarily tell it on the basis of performances. But now Mohamed Al-Fayed has invested again. I guess it's better to spend than to take the risk of dropping out of the Premier League.
Why, indeed so. Indeed so.
I would put Wigan's Amir Zaki for next to nothing as one of the bargains of the summer as well. I think he'll do really well for them. And he's got everything it takes to be a top centre forward in the Premier League.
Well, he's been described as the best striker in the world.
Well, that's on the basis of his goal scoring rate for Egypt, which is very impressive. It's more than one every two games. He's strong, fast, as strong and fast as Heskey, but he's a much better finisher and technician than Heskey is.
How old is he?
He's in his mid-20s. I don't know.
That name again, Paul Dawn?
In his mid-20s. Amir Zaki. They'll certainly not be in relegation trouble this year, I think, with Palacios and Valencia there as well.
You know, there have been one or two players coming in from the continent. Samir Nasri, for example, at Arsenal. And a lot of hype around the young man. How good is he, Paul?
Yeah, I think he's very good. I think he'll do very well. I think he'll probably need a little time to adapt to the Premier League, although he is very strong despite his slight physique. And I think he'll prove to be better in the long run than Kleb. He's a good player. He's quite similar to Fabregas in the sense that he can spot a pass and deliver it very quickly. But he's also good at carrying the ball, a la Kleb. So I think he'll be a very useful player for them.
So I'm just really wondering how long his settling in time will be, because almost every single one of these type of players that Wenger buys every year, they take at least 6 months to really adjust to the tempo. With a very few exceptions. And of course, he usually had a more experienced core around which these players could learn. Mm. And this year it's perhaps a bit different, that everybody's young and they all have to sort of gain experience from playing with each other. I think it's a very dangerous route to go down, and I think it could well backfire for them.
He's also taking the same risk again as regards defence. I mean, I thought Touré had a poor season, and Galas, of course, an even worse one, and yet they still are essentially centre-backs. I don't see Senderos or Duru challenging them, so he's betting on them being far better this year than they were last, although Galas scoring on the midweek will have raised his spirits.
No replacement for Flamini either?
Well, I think he will. That's something he will bring in. He said he's got one more big signing to make.
Well, they're talking about Gökhan Inler of Switzerland.
He's decent enough.
Utility. Yeah. There you go. Well, and so Arsenal, we're not big on their chances. Is that right? I mean, nobody ever is pre-season.
I think they'll do well. I mean, you can't legislate for injuries. That's what derailed them last year when they had a really savage spate of injuries. But they still only finished 4 points behind United and Chelsea. I think if injuries are slightly less lenient on them, I think on their day they can beat any of the teams in the league.
I think though, Paul, they recovered to 4 points once they knew they weren't going to win it. You know, they sort of rallied a bit towards the end, didn't they, Arsenal last season?
I can't remember.
Yeah, but also they are lucky this year because their opening programme is fantastic. And during this time of injuries, the first six games are West Brom, Fulham, Newcastle, Blackburn, Bolton, Hull, and half of them at home. So, I mean, they don't face the big boys for a while and they can get people fit and maybe sign players. I think Arsenal could be really, really dangerous in the knockout tournaments, including the Champions League. I just don't see how they can stand an entire Premier League programme.
Is the top four going to stay the same as last year? I mean, positions may change within it, but are we going to see anybody breaking into that?
Well, there was thoughts of Tottenham, but I don't know if they're in free fall or building. I can't tell at the moment. It depends what happens with Keane and Berbatov going, assuming Berbatov does go, and then how they replace them. But they've made exciting signings. Modric obviously being one of them, and Bentley and so on. I find Tottenham an enigma, but they
and
were
Giovanni,
the ones.
Giovanni, of course, as well.
And Giovanni, yeah, indeed, yeah. But apart from that, I don't see who's going to displace Arsenal and Liverpool and Chelsea and Man United.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Rafael, who's going to be your surprise team?
I think Man City.
in a good way, sense.
I agree with Kevin. Unfortunately, I think there isn't really a second tier strong enough to get in there. I mean, we talked about Everton, I think, last year round. They didn't quite have the strength. Tottenham, I think, would be very exciting going forward, but can they sort of grind out these results that you really need? Teams like Everton and Villa don't win these must-win games against direct rivals or even lower teams scrapping at home. So I still got a question mark. And for me, perhaps the most interesting story in a medium to long-term perspective will be whether Arsenal can actually get into the Champions League again, because I think if they for some reason do struggle for fourth spot, which I think it is just possible, you know, that could have huge knock-on effects for their financial situation, because I think a clearer picture is emerging of just how debilitating debt from the stadium is. I think this could be bit of a pressure point for them.
Well, indeed. Now, you know, we haven't even touched on yet the whole business of Chelsea and Man United. United hanging on to Ronaldo, possibly picking up Berbatov. Chelsea, meanwhile, with one or two arrivings. As yet, neither Kaká nor the other chap, Rabinho. But they did bring in Deco. I don't know how much effect that's going to have. Bosingwa apparently going to be a top signing for them. And, of course, Big Phil. Is it between them for the title? And if so, who's going
to
get it?
Well, the question to me is the centre-forwards. I do think Chelsea might well win the title this season. But I think, you know, Drogba, brilliant player, full repertoire of strength and skill and height and so on. But he didn't score many goals last season, really. Mm. And his knee seems to be a constant problem to
Nicholas
him.
Nicholas Anelka?
Well, exactly. I mean, Anelka didn't do anything either. But one of those two, if they came to life, would make a big difference. Right. I think they've got to.
Because Anelka showed some signs of life against Milan, you know, quite recently.
But we'll see on Sunday when they play Portsmouth, because that's a decent defence, and we'll find out how incisive Chelsea actually are.
Well, I don't think Portsmouth are as decent a defence as they were last year. Saul Campbell. Yeah. Is visibly on the wane, much like Jamie Carragher.
Yeah, I thought Distan played a blinder last week. And it may be that I think Kabul probably, French people will tell you, is a lot better than he looked at Spurs last season.
And one final thing just on this while we're here, because we haven't talked about you know, the whole business of who might be the first manager out the door, etc. You've got Kerbisch, who's the bookie's favourite in the sack race. I'm wondering how many problems Paul Ince is going to face at a difficult Blackburn Rovers.
It's a rotten job to get, isn't it? They've overperformed, and now people at Bentley have gone, and this interest in Rocky Santa Cruz. Right. I'm not even sure if Santa Cruz could score that many goals again for them. You know, and certainly Middlesbrough, I think, will be a really interesting team this season.
Mm-hmm. Middlesbrough?
I just think an interesting team this season. I mean, the winger Marvin Emnes on one side and Downing in the other, and they've got Afonso Alves and Tunkai Sanli. I think it's just a really, really young-looking, adventurous team, but people have got into the habit of thinking, oh yeah, Middlesbrough, can we talk about something else? But I do think they've got a lot of pace in that team.
Oh, right, Kevin.
I think the most important transfer or buy for the title race will be Ferguson's assistant, because I think they've lost a lot. They've probably lost their best Portuguese member of the staff. They kept Cristiano Ronaldo, but I think Kerish's input has been absolutely tremendous. His departure, coupled with the fact that Ferguson has now given himself a deadline for retirement, and that effect that might have, and the fact that it had last time he made it, which was very negative, will be a problem for United, in my view.
Can I disagree completely?
Yes.
I will remember Brian Kidd being the man behind Alex Ferguson's success. And then Steve McLaren, even people like Roy Keane, said tremendous first-team coach. Did Ferguson miss them? No. In the case of Carlos Queiroz, I remember Man U fans denouncing him as a person who inflicted this turgid five-man midfield
Roy
on
Keane,
them.
For example.
Yeah,
that
which only began to work in the past year or two. And also, of course, a bit of a flop as a manager when he went to Real Madrid.
Well, that's true. There is a language issue, though, here as well.
That's a fact.
Linguistically, the makeup of the Man United side is that much more international.
I have to disagree completely, Kevin, because any United player, Ferguson actually does very little these days on the training ground.
It's all about the
fact that they played so wonderfully fluid. Which is the really, for me, the key thing in modern football is fluidity, the flexibility up front. You never knew. You know, they had a formation, but they very rarely stuck to that formation during the game. They were attacking with four or five players from very deep positions, very difficult to defend again. But this is a very complex system to get right. And as you said, it took Kerish and Ferguson a long time to get it right. I just wonder, can they do it without
him? I watched them last Sunday and thought they were even more fluid than ever. I mean, I know Portsmouth kept them out, but I thought they looked really smooth. I just don't believe any coach is 100% as important as Alex Ferguson is to Manchester United.
Now, it is a wide world of football out there. We've got more on the Premier League coming up a bit later on, but regular listeners will know that we also offer more continental coverage here than, as the expression has it, a fat man's duvet. And thus, very, very shortly, we're going to be getting the lowdown on the situation in La Liga from our friend Sid Lowe in Madrid. Right then, Spain, unlike Cristiano Ronaldo, we can go to Madrid to hear the latest from our man, Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you?
Hello, James. I'm okay, thank you.
I'm very well. Last time we spoke to you, you'll recall that we were doing it through a mobile phone that had been placed on speakerphone with a microphone pointing at it, and you had to shout very, very loud from the middle of a fountain somewhere in Madrid. Happy days of our Euro 2008 coverage. With me here, I have to tell you, Kevin McCarra, Paul Doyle, and Raphael Honigstein. And Sid, we mentioned Euro 2008. Obviously, everyone's still very excited about that, are they, presumably? But there's one or two other issues, are there not? Laporta in trouble, Calderon possibly in trouble. What's the situation?
Yeah, the situation really, in a way, is that actually it's tipped slightly. In the after the European Championships, Laporta had that vote of no confidence, which he won, but only just won, because of course they needed 2/3 to go against him for him to actually be booted out. I think he held on by 4%, and it looked like, right, there's no way he can hold on, because a load of directors walked out on him. The fans were saying he had to go, but he has held on, and he seems to have ridden out the storm to some extent. In so much as Barcelona have signed reasonably well, quite a lot of the concerns about Pep Guardiola have gone, because they've played very, very well in pre-season. And also, of course, it always helps, because the nature of Real Madrid and Barcelona is that anything negative that happens to Madrid helps bolster Barcelona and vice versa. And the fact that Madrid have missed out on Cristiano Ronaldo has helped to kind of, you like, tip the critical balance the other way. And right now, while Barcelona are only 4 or 5 bad results away from Laporta being in huge trouble again, at the moment, he's just about treading water.
So how much damage has it done to Calderon, the fact that Ronaldo, yet another big proclaimed signing, has failed to actually arrive?
Yeah, an enormous amount of damage. I mean, I think really, in a way, that the full answer to that won't happen until the season starts, when Calderon is actually there to be shot at. And by that, I mean, you know, physically being in the Bernabeu, if Real Madrid play badly, he will be there for everyone to go for. Because, of course, the problem with Calderon is, well, he's got all sorts of problems. I mean, not least the fact that he keeps on opening his mouth and saying foolish things. But the main one he's got is that he's never really felt like a credible Real Madrid president, in the sense that he won the elections with just over 8,000 votes when there's over 80,000 Real Madrid members. Now, that was enough to win in the first-past-the-post system, but it meant that people thought that, hang on, is this entirely credible? Not least because of all the postal votes were thrown out, and with those postal votes, if they'd been included, Calderon wouldn't have won. So he's been in this kind of constant campaign for legitimacy ever since. The problem is that legitimacy never comes, despite winning 2 successive league titles, because the things that he promises just haven't come off. You know, of course, he ran on the promise Kaká, Robben and Cesc. Well, Robben came but a year too late and spent most of the year injured. This time, although he's publicly tried to keep a distance from it, there's been no doubt at all that he's been after Ronaldo, and he's lost him. Calderon needs a big player.
Sid, can I ask you about Robinho? I talk of Chelsea now going to about $24 million. It seems like one of these transfers that will happen in the end. How big a loss would it be to Real, and do you see him having an impact in the Premier League?
He would be a very big loss for Real Madrid, because they haven't got Cristiano Ronaldo. The problem, in a way, for them is that they're being played at their own game. All the way through that Cristiano Ronaldo business, Real Madrid was saying, while they were, much as they were trying to pretend they had nothing to do with it, they were saying, look, if a player isn't happy at a club, he will never stay at a club. You can't keep a player who doesn't want to be there. Well, now, of course, that's rebounding against them, because Robinho is using that exact tactic. Robinho is saying, well, I don't want to stay, so actually you better let me go. Madrid are saying no, because they recognise that they would lose this player and because it would be potentially damaging to them. It looks like Robinho, and this is the big difference with Cristiano Ronaldo, is prepared to push this. One of the things, it looks like he's refusing to go to Valencia for the Spanish Super Cup. He's coming very, very public and saying, I want out, something which Cristiano Ronaldo never quite did with that kind of really bold and really blunt stance that I think Robinho is going to come out with in the next couple of days. And I think that means that Robinho may well be able to force this transfer through. But of course, Chelsea will have to pay a hell of a lot of money for it. Madrid then have to go and get someone. The trouble is, there aren't the players to get. David Villa is the obvious choice, but David Villa is complicated by the fact that Valencia don't want to sell to Real Madrid and will do virtually anything to stop it, as we saw 8 years ago now with Gaizka Mendieta, when Valencia sold him to Lazio, even though he wanted to go to Madrid. And not only that, but David Villa, if he was to come, there's a real fear in Madrid that if he turns up, that would create problems for Raul, and that in turn will create problems in the dressing room.
So just sum it up for us then, Sid. You've got Valencia also under new ownership now, with some relief for their rather bleak financial situation. You've got Barcelona, a bit of turmoil there. Real Madrid, lots of questions still to be answered. Villarreal, the big surprise last time around. What do you see happening at the top of the Liga this season?
Well, it's one of those years when you look at it and you think, this might be the season when one of the big two doesn't win it. Traditionally, and then last year I couldn't have got this any more wrong, I said that I thought the team would really challenge would be Valencia, and the players they had and the manager they had, they should have done. I mean, they sacked their manager 9 games into the season, 4 points off the top, with Real Madrid to play in the next match, and then it all went horribly, horribly wrong. Valencia's ownership problem hasn't actually solved their debt, so they're not going to buy anyone, and they're quite likely to lose David Silva. So I think while they have a very, very good manager and a good squad, they'll fall short. Sevilla lost three of their best players in Poulsen, Keita and Dani Alves, but have bought very well and have been brilliant in pre-season, so they could be okay. And Atletico Madrid have a fantastically good first 11. The trouble is they have virtually no bench at all, so I don't know if they can pick up, I don't think they can really hang on to a league title challenge unless they remain almost entirely injury free. I can't help thinking that Real Madrid won't be as strong as last year and that Barcelona will be stronger. So my money would be on Barcelona, but I think we might see some of the other sides at least getting in the mix. Villarreal, the side you mentioned there, phenomenal last year, and they've bought very, very well again. Whether or not they can keep it up in the Champions League and the league, I'm not sure, but they could be a decent outside bet this season.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Now, there you go. That's the Liga. Serie A also yet to get underway. They also start at the end of August. And quickly to mention the situation there, we have Chievo back in top flight, those famous flying donkeys, back in the big time. Bologna, seven times national champions. Bologna, but not for a very long time, since the 60s, in fact. Have they finished top of the pile? Lecce, also up. Always enjoyed them. Then you've got the usual mix. It's quite interesting, the mix at the top, because there is a very strong possibility that, as with last year, we're going to see the, if you want to call them, big four broken up. We saw Fiorentina nipping in last year and getting a place in the Champions League at Milan's expense. Milan, as a result, are really going to concentrate on the league this year. They've actually, they've brought in some players. Not necessarily young players, although Flamini is an excellent signing from that point of view. You've got Zambrotta coming in from Barcelona. And, of course, they've got Ronaldinho, 28 years old. He's at the Olympics. He's played every single minute of every single game for Brazil so far, and shows every sign of returning to Milan in very good shape indeed. And I would guess, that he's going to be very, very motivated to prove a lot of people very, very wrong. So that could be a very, very interesting move. Kevin McCarron.
Just touch a bit Milan, because the kind of elephant in the room thing, I suppose, is really the whole Kaká story, which has been reported extensively, particularly in The Observer and The Guardian. And doesn't also, there's some kind of conversation going on. People in Milan say to me that Kaká doesn't particularly want to leave. What's your understanding of it?
Well, he has made so many comments and unequivocal comments about wanting to stay there for a long time, about Milan being his home, and Milan as well being his home. He's now had a child in the city. He very much likes the idea of becoming a Maldini-esque figure for them, assuming the captaincy and that kind of thing. Having said that, what he did say was that he wouldn't rule out if it was beneficial to all parties. And when you think of 74 million or whatever entering Milan's coffers.
Well, when you failed to qualify for the Champions League and you need to rebuild the team.
Yeah, well, indeed. I think they've done quite a decent job without spending too much money, apart from Ronaldinho. They've what was he, about 17 million, I think.
Yeah, Zambrotta's fairly old, though, isn't he?
Or he's 31, 32.
Well, not old, but getting that way.
Well, in Milan's terms, he's not. In Serie A terms, that's not old. But in the Premiership these days, interesting how it used to be the other way around. Players used to go to the Premier League to retire. And Inter, they didn't get Lampard, bless, but they did get Solari Montari, and they picked up Amantino Mancini from Roma. And, of course, Jose Mourinho is now in, and the despair and delight of the press already. He upset everybody after using Milanese slang in his debut press conference. Everyone thought he was a top geezer. And then he was fairly, fairly scathing on the subject of Claudio Ranieri, just for a change, calling him a loser. And then he said, but at 70, he's never going to change. He's never going to win anything now. And this was regarded as a lack of respect.
Is he trying to divert attention to the fact he's got an amazingly old squad at Inter? I mean,
is it that old?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's not no
Montari is that old? Is he? How old's Montari?
Oh, no, Montari, he's a young one. I mean, the rest
got Balotelli, who's 18, who's now become officially Italian. Who's they're all very excited about Adriano, who's still young despite the fact he's been around for ages, and he's coming off a brilliant season on loan with Sao Paulo, but has got injured for the next month or so. I think Inter are going to be very, very strong, and they have to start as favourites
for La Liga. Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking more. La Liga, Serie A.
Champions League. Which is what Mourinho's there to do, because they've won three league titles on the bounce.
And that wasn't good enough.
Yeah, so. And they've been abject in Europe once they got past the group stages. So that's the question. I don't know what you guys reckon on Inter's
chances. They wanted probably to sell a few players, but haven't really found the takers either. I mean, they've got a million midfielders, haven't they? I mean, I'm not exaggerating. And perhaps
only a bit.
perhaps that's why some of their proposed transfers, people coming in, haven't happened, because the squad is so huge that certainly Mourinho, who likes 22, 23 players, find it a bit difficult to sign more players.
We should just stress that, as with Spain, the season hasn't actually begun, won't begin for another couple of weeks, and there probably will be one or two players making their way out.
Who do you think would come in?
For Inter?
For Inter.
I don't know that anyone is actually still going to come in. I think that one or two players will still be going, although there is still talk of them buying another midfielder to make it a million and one. Paul Doyle, remove those matchsticks, please, and tell us all about France, where the season has already got underway. A spectacular 4-4 between Rennes and Marseille. But the big question is Lyon.
Yeah, well, it's business as usual. Lyon kicked off their campaign with a 3-0 home win over Toulouse, which is no major achievement, in fairness. But Karim Benzema showed that last season wasn't a fluke and by scoring twice, and he's already the top scorer in the league. They looked very solid under new manager Claude Puel. Their defensive problems, well, it's too early to say, their defensive problems have been resolved because it was only Toulouse, but they did look solid there, and that was even without John Mensah, who's still out injured. He's their new centre-back who they signed from Rennes. But Marseille, as you say, they'd be my tip, as usual, to run Lyon closest. They're exhilarating going forward. Atem Ben Arfa, who of course they bought from Lyon over the summer, has been brilliant so far this season, both in the Champions League during the week against Brann Bergen, where they won 1-0 away from home. And in the season opener against Rennes, when they were brilliant, they scored 4 away to Rennes, but due to comically bad defending and slightly unlucky defending, in fairness, they drew 4-4. But they look really good, and they would be the most likely to challenge. PSG, of course, who recruited prominently over the summer, bringing in the likes of Makélélé and Ludovic Julie. They got off to a predictably poor start. They lost 1-0 at Monaco. They have problems at the back, and they still haven't found a replacement for Pauleta up front. They had envisaged that David Ngog might be that man, but of course Liverpool came in and bought him. That was despite the fact that last season they played him wide on the right midfield, Dirk Kuyt style. But he is actually a decent centre forward. So they're trying to bring in Kesman now, it seems.
Now, a couple of players that you mentioned making their move abroad, among them Johan Elmander, who didn't look that special at Euro 2008 and is now going to be probably not looking that special for Bolton. Is that a fair assumption?
I think he's a good player.
Yeah?
Actually, I think 10 million or whatever it was for him may turn out to be slightly overpriced. But I think he has the potential to be a decent upgrade on Kevin Davis. You know, he is big and tall and powerful. He can use his elbows, but he's also quite fast and decent technician. I think he could hit double figures. Won't stop Bolton going down, of course.
Right, of course. And who's the player described as the French Titus Bramble who's joined him?
Oh, Bernard Mendy.
All right.
Who on his debut for Hull in a 4-0 defeat to Crewe gave away 2 penalties and missed 1. So he's a man to look out for.
He wasn't hiding them, was he?
But in fairness to him, I have to flag up because he is without doubt the most ridiculed player in France. Well, at least he was until he left. But he was even beaten up by PSG fans who invaded the training ground there last season. But despite this, in the last minute of last season's League Cup final, he volunteered to step up and take the penalty that won them the game. And he took it very well.
OK. Well, there you go. That's France then. And all very interesting. That pretty much wraps it up from the continent. Germany.
Hello.
Apart from that country,
called small place.
Germany. Yeah, it starts this weekend, is that
right? It does indeed. People. It starts Friday night.
Right.
With
that's tonight.
Yes, with the champions Bayern entertaining Hamburg. The Hamburg without Raphael van der Vaart, who made a very predictable exit to Real Madrid.
Ribery's out injured for Bayern?
He's out injured. They
Oliver
reckon
Kahn's gone.
Oliver Kahn's gone. They reckon Ribery will be back for the Champions League, which is just as well because Bayern haven't really bought any top-class player this year after spending a lot of money.
What about the Lumberjacks' favourite, Tim Borowski?
Yeah, Tim Borowski's in, but he came on a free. And they did make an offer to Flamini and Gattuso that could be refused. Both of them did refuse them. And they toyed with the idea of signing Mario Gomez of Stuttgart, who also had a fantastic Euro, along with Luca Toni. but they were turned down again. The big thing for Bayern has been they said, OK, never mind all these players. We've got enough players already, but now we've got a manager. And this is our new signing. So they've made out that Klinsmann will come in and improve every single player. That's his mission. He himself has said that that's what he wants to do, work very individually with all these players and get the most out of players who haven't really played that well for Bayern, players like Schweinsteiger, Podolski, who always seem to play better for Jogi Löw. So Bayern has said, you know, Klinsmann, you've worked with them before, please do the same thing, and all of a sudden we'll be a much better side. Players like Sosa from Argentina, who look very good on paper, haven't really done it yet. They want Klinsmann to improve that. He's brought in a whole coach load of new assistants, experts, fitness gurus, etc. Combined with a sort of slightly new agey Californian think positive mental attitude and positive thinking, etc. But I think it's a good thing for Bayern to go down that route. And I also think that it signals a slight shift in the Bundesliga overall. It's all coming around to the view, a bit like the Premier League, where you delegate more power away from the bosses, as it were, the you know technical directors, etc. Also away from the captains and the players to the manager, who is supposed to come in with a big vision, with big ideas beyond the first 11, youth academies, etc. And I think this is a trend that will have positive effects for Germany in the long run. I think it was long overdue to go down that route.
You mentioned the backroom team that Jurgen Klinsmann has brought in. Is it the same American trainers that he used when he was in charge of the national team? Because I know that Monaco have used them now this summer, which may account for their good start to the league. And Turkey, of course, used them in Euro 2008 when they surprised everyone.
Yeah, Mark Verstegen. He's not there full time because he's based, I think, in Arizona. But yeah, it is, these ideas is very much the machines as well, which cost a lot of money. Bayern shipped over a few of them. And, you know, he's even got an American cross-Mexican assistant as first team coach. And there will be addresses to the players, team talks will be held in English, German, Spanish, French. They'll have simultaneous translators on headphones in team meetings. I'm not making this up. And it's all going to be terribly international. We even have the option for players to take language courses in different languages or take other courses, other hobbies they might want to have. So Klinsmann's very much about personal development, getting the most out of player, making players more rounded people as well. It's very much a sort of, yeah, as I said, a California attitude to watch things. But I think it'll be good. It'll be a breath of fresh air for the Bundesliga.
It'll be disastrous. I can say the whole thing's going to be a complete disaster. The last thing you want to do is give players any kind of slack. There you go. Well, thank you for that, Raphael. I look forward to hearing more about that as the season develops. We'll take another quick pause and then return with a look at this weekend and any other bits of business we might have. Stay with us, listeners.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Now, well, one or two other things to talk about then in this inaugural Football Weekly of the season. We'll be back on Monday with a review of the weekend's games, which we'll be talking about in a moment. First, though, quick mention for the extraordinary situation at the LA Galaxy. This, I have to say, had passed me by completely. But earlier this week, manager Ruud Gullit and what was he, kind of team director, general manager, Alexi Lalas, were both shoved out of David Beckham's LA Galaxy. Rafa, you seem to know a little bit about this.
Well, very little, I have to admit. But there are some rumours coming out of Los Angeles that Beckham was, shall we say, not adverse to these decisions. That Ruud Gullit had perhaps fallen foul with him a little bit. I think it's very interesting that only a month ago, I seem to remember reading a lot of stories in the British press saying Beckham had actually done what he was supposed to do, transform the MLS, transform the fortunes of the Galaxy. Of course, since then, they've had this terrible run, and they're now in the bottom half of the table, perhaps not making into the playoffs. So I guess with Lalas, it was just a case of, he had to leave at some stage because
He talks too much.
Yes, he is awful. But Gullit is an interesting one. I'm wondering, I'm sure we'll hear more from him because personal reasons,
Well, there was a lot of talk that he wasn't the most popular man with the players.
But they've brought in his place. Paul Doyle was joking that perhaps Tom Cruise might be the new. But it's actually Kobe Jones. So they've gone for the dreadlock look again, which is, you know, stylistically, they've kept that.
Continuity, yeah.
Yeah. Kobe Jones, interesting choice. Out of left field, I'd have said. But anyway, we're not here to discuss the Premier League, are we? Not when there's all sorts of other topics like the... did I just say Premier League?
Yes.
Yeah, we are here. Sorry, right. We are here. What a difference a knot makes. We are here to discuss the Premier League, which begins, and what have we got? Not going to read through... Well, OK, I'll read through all the fixtures. Arsenal, West Brom, Bolton versus Stoke. That's the one we're all looking forward to. Yep. Saturday afternoon, Everton, Blackburn, Hull, Fulham, Middlesbrough, Tottenham, West Ham, Wigan, Sunderland, Liverpool on Saturday. Could be interesting. Liverpool have an abject record on opening days, do they not? And Sunderland, you know, well, Kevin? I mean,
you know, they spent a lot last summer, they spent a lot this summer. So you think with that amount of expenditure, they should be kind of a mid-table...
Sunderland,
yeah. And a mid-table team at home would make things difficult for Liverpool, who still seem to lack that bit of zest and panache about them.
Where are you going this weekend?
Chelsea.
Oh, you're yes, seeing them play Portsmouth Sunday afternoon?
Who will certainly test whether Chelsea have got anything up front. Because I think it's quite durable, Portsmouth.
Right. OK, also on Sunday, two other interesting games. Aston Villa taking on Man City. A lot of question marks over both teams, particularly over Man City, and rumours flying around that given Dr. Shinawatra's current situation, that Mark Hughes may be deciding that the post isn't as advertised and walking.
Yeah, and yet we hear that he's made a £12 million bid for Rocky Santa Cruz. It's hard to figure out what's going on there.
Right.
Joe was their big summer signing, of course, so he's out at the Olympics, which means that they're still very short up front, because Bodjanov, who was out all of last season, looked good in pre-season, appears to have picked up a knock that may rule him out at the weekend. So they may have to go with Darius Vassell and Daniel
injured.
Sturridge, who is a good... Vassell is injured as well,
is
he?
Yeah.
Okay, no,
the Daniel Sturridge was excellent last night.
He's a really good player.
In a poor team, he was quite good, but he's not going to score a lot in the Premier League. They terribly need a forward, but at least Joe's had, Russian season, spring to autumn, so he won't be all that tired, you think, when he gets back to the Olympics.
But this is a team that failed to beat, what was their name, the Danish one?
Oh, Midtjylland.
Right. So what chance are they going to have away at Villa Park?
Well, to be fair, they I know it's maybe illusory, they play well pre-season and pass the ball nicely, but I think lacking anything in attack, as they now do, does kind of undermine the whole project. And until they get a forward back, either from injury or by signing somebody or Joe from the Olympics, they're in trouble.
Well, quite. And the other game on Sunday, Man United beginning their title defence against Newcastle. Newcastle this year, any thoughts?
How depressing to be fighting to keep Alan Smith. Sorry.
And they have made a signing at the back. Fabio Culicini, the Argentine international defender, coming in. Rafi, you're nodding sagely.
He's got a lot of hair.
But we all know how unimportant that is to someone's performance.
He's given away, I seem to remember, a fair amount of fouls, and he's a very hot-headed fellow.
Yeah. Joey Barton not in the picture for them either, speaking of hot-headed fellows.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing, though.
Michael Owen seems to be ruled out. I mean, they shipped 11 against United in two games last season, and you can see a repeat this weekend, can't you?
You certainly can. You certainly can. Now, well, there you go. I should mention... our fantasy football extravaganza pool. Would you like to explain a little bit more about this?
Well, no. As I said, it's a fantasy football league on the Guardian's website. It's really good. It's better than all the other games out there. There's a lot more variables, so it will truly reflect your knowledge, James.
You're meant to be selling this to me.
Well, a league has been set up for the listener of this podcast. It's called Football Weekly. Mm. And the password you'll need to enter this private league is Pod Almighty. Right. All one word, all lowercase.
So you go to the Guardian website, you click on Fantasy Football. It then encourages you to make a team with lots of brightly coloured jerseys, which you do. And then you have to register it, which I seem to be going wrong at that point. Mm. And there it'll ask you if you want to join any friends league. So you join the Football Weekly League and the password is Pod Almighty.
That's right.
Right. Okay, well, good luck with that. I know I'm going to be making my third attempt to put a team in very, very shortly. I think, though, in the meantime, that's probably all we've got time for today. We will be back on Monday. Kevin McCarra, can you leave us with your prediction for the title and the three relegated teams?
Yep, despite my doubts about Chelsea's forwards, I think they will be a bit refreshed this season and will win it, narrowly from United, of course.
Right.
The three down, very, very boring, the three who came up.
Okay, Paul Doyle?
Yeah, I think Chelsea will win as well, ahead of Arsenal. The three to go down, Hull, Stoke and Bolton.
Chelsea ahead of Arsenal?
Yeah, Arsenal second.
Well, interesting. And United, what, third or something?
Third or fourth, yeah.
Ooh, okay. Wow, crikey. Raphael.
Chelsea as well. Sorry to be a sheep and following the herd, but I do like them a lot this year. And also, I think Stoke and West Brom and Fulham. For me to go
controversial.
Very interesting. I worry about
Fulham will be comfortably mid-table.
Right. I worry about Rovers if Santa Cruz does make that move to Eastlands. Mm. But well, there you go. Thank you very much, all of you, for joining us today, and you, the listeners, and producer Ben. And we'll be seeing you all on Monday. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.